It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Suicide car bomber kills at least four in Mogadishu. Northern Sierra Leone on extended Ebola lockdown. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. A suicide car bomber in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, Sunday killed at least four people and wounded several others in an attack apparently targeting U.S. trained forces. The security minister said the attack occurred in the Waberi district near the international airport. He said officials knew of the attack in advance, and the blast took place during a pursuit of the vehicle. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility. The Islamist group has recently escalated attacks in the Somali capital. In Sierra Leone, a five-day Ebola lockdown in the northern Tonkolili district was extended Sunday for 2 weeks. The government has also imposed additional screening measures at Freetown International Airport after two workers apparently came down with the virus. A U.S. lawmaker just back from a fact-finding trip to Liberia said Sunday the Ebola epidemic there has eased. But Senator Chris Coons, appearing on the U.S. television program Face the Nation, said it's premature to draw U.S. military forces down from Liberia.
We can't declare mission accomplished and withdraw too early here. We can bring home 1,000 or more of these troops now. They're currently bored because they've accomplished a lot of their mission of building infrastructure, building new Ebola treatment units all over the country, deploying new military testing labs all over the country, and setting up a vital infrastructure. The raging epidemic that threatened the whole country in September is now down to a few embers scattered across this country.
Senator Coons calls for a new strategy that allows some U.S. troops to remain for the rest of the new year to help Liberians transition U.S.-built facilities into Liberian-run ones that will carry on the work to fight against Ebola. He says that we'll pass it along to the Obama administration. This is VOA News. In the United Kingdom, a British nurse who contracted the deadly virus in Sierra Leone is fighting for her life at a London hospital. Pauline Caffrey's condition now listed as critical. A U.S. health worker has possibly exposed to the Ebola virus while in Sierra Leone is to be placed under observation at a Nebraska hospital. The medical director of the biocontainment unit at the University of Nebraska Medical Center said the unidentified patient, quote, is not ill and is not contagious. In Germany, a South Korean medical worker recently working with patients in Sierra Leone has been hospitalized and placed in an isolation unit at a Berlin hospital. The patient is not displaying any symptoms, but sustained a finger cut while taking blood from a patient December 29th. Meanwhile, the UN Children's Agency UNICEF is launching a campaign to inform and fight the stigma surrounding Ebola. Some patients who survive face rejection by their communities. Some are sharing their stories on a mobile app, hashtag I Survived Ebola. It's funded by U.S. philanthropist and co-founder of Microsoft, Paul G. Allen's Foundation, which has committed $100 million to fight the disease. Suspected Boko Haram militants have seized a military base in northeast Nigerian town of Baga in Borno State. Residents said the armed Islamist group overwhelmed troops after hours-long battles Saturday at the facility near Lake Chad. Soldiers and civilians reportedly fled. A local resident told the French press agency the attack prompted residents of Baga and five other towns and fishing villages to flee in a neighboring Chad. More than 8 months after the abduction of more than 200 schoolgirls from the northeast town of Chibok, the parents there are appealing to the United Nations for help in gaining the safe release of their daughters from Boko Haram. Dauda Ilya is a spokesman for the parents.
The Chibok community is pained. We cannot take this anymore. And this is 2015. We would do all that is in the books to demand action from this government until these girls are rescued. And that's what we want to emphasize today. This would involve, as a community, writing the president, escalating it. We will engage the UN. We would also write letters to the United Nations and protest this neglect and nonchalance by the government of the Federal Republic towards the Chibok people and the abducted girls.
The parents say they're being kept in the dark by the government about what it is doing to return the girls and what their status is. Authorities in the Gambia reportedly have ordered the closure of the Taranga radio station as part of a crackdown following last week's failed attack on the presidential palace. The French press agency says the independent station translates news from English into local languages. AFP says the station was briefly shuttered in 2012 amid an international outcry over the state's execution of 9 prisoners. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, the 5th day of January, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone introduces new Ebola measures at Freetown Airport.
We want to make sure that our airport continues to respect the standard operating procedures for enhanced screening of all airport staff and passengers.
Abdullahi Berete is Sierra Leone's government spokesman. Gambian diaspora planned a worldwide protest this month against what they call unlawful arrest following an attempted coup. A suicide car bomber killed at least four people in Somalia's capital on Sunday. And South Sudan's military accuses rebels of launching new attacks.
The SPLA as a national army of South Sudan, we are committed to the regional and international effort to bring peace to South Sudan. And it is the rebel attacking the SPLA position in Nasir and all these towns that they are claiming.
Colonel Philip Agwo is South Sudan's military spokesman, will examine Senegal's family planning policy as part of VOA's Africa Baby Boom series. And clashes by farmers and herders add to tension in Central African Republic. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of Sierra Leone on Sunday introduced new Ebola screening measures at the Freetown International Airport after two workers there apparently contracted the virus. Government spokesman Abdullahi Berete says the measures are intended to reassure the public that Sierra Leone airports continue to respect the standard operating procedures for all airport workers and passengers.
We just had a case a few days ago wherein a worker at the airport who is attached at the restaurant got infected with confirmed Ebola. So that's a red flag for us, recognizing that so far, since the outbreak of the Ebola virus in Sierra Leone, we have not exported any patient out of our airport who has confirmed to be Ebola positive based on the symptoms from our airport. That is why we alerted all our stakeholders, and we had a meeting with the workers at the airport, and we explained to them that we are going to put in enhanced screening that is based on the standard operating procedures for all airport workers.
Now, are these new measures are for Sierra Leoneans who are working at the airport, or are they just intended for people who are coming in or going out?
These are specifically targeting the workers. It is going to be round the clock. And for passengers arriving and those that are departing, we still subject them to the same surveillance system because, as I mentioned to you, we want to make sure that our airport continues to respect the standard operating procedures for enhanced screening of all airport staff and passengers. So these are just other measures we are implementing just to reassure the public that both the workers at the airport are not at risk following this one incident, and also to further rekindle the confidence in both our passengers that are arriving and departing that there is no cause for alarm.
Mr. Berete, what can you tell us about the extension of a lockdown in the northern part of Sierra Leone?
Well, the extension, as you know, the western area surge that was declared by His Excellency the President came to an end officially on the 1st of this month, January. But the President has also encouraged people in the respective districts upcountry to bring in measures that they think will go a long way towards the mitigation of the spread of the virus. And so far, we are seeing a lot of dividend to that respect. The reason being, imagine yesterday we reported for the whole country 37 confirmed cases, and today it's 30. So the fluctuation in itself from the hotspots up country, particularly in Potloko district, Bombali district, as well as Kono district, they are now dwindling in terms of confirmed cases for Ebola.
Abdullahi Berete is Sierra Leone's government spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Gambian diaspora are planning worldwide demonstrations later this month to protest what they say are unlawful arrests and investigation by Gambian President Yahya Jammeh following a failed attempted coup by a group of dissidents led by the former commander of the Presidential Guard. U.S.-based Gambian rights activist Usenu Mbenga tells Ricky Stryak the purpose of the protest is to call international attention to what the group fears will be a brutal crackdown and retribution by President Jammeh.
This is what happens because the Dragnet has already started arresting innocent people, people who didn't have anything to do with this, including soldiers and family members.
When you say people who weren't involved in it, what do you mean? Do you have information about family members being detained?
Yes. You know, it is, you know, tangible information of family members being arrested who were related to the alleged coup makers.
Is there concern in the following week that the backlash will continue, that the arrests will continue?
Yes, we do. And knowing him and the regime and how you see what would happen when you attempt this, but we just go back to the same thing. We just always try. We have always reminded him of how he came into power. And don't ever rule out that some forces, you know, will attempt to do what you did to come into power. But yes, the Dragnet, we are very, very, very concerned about this Dragnet, you know, that has already been unleashed. So that's why we are not just going to sit down and let it unfold in front of us without resistance. So, you know, we are planning on the usual way of how we protested, you know, barbarism, you know, for the last many years. So we're going to protest it, yes.
How are you and other diaspora members going to protest this?
Right now we are planning to organize, you know, like simultaneous organizations in the U.S., the U.K., in Scandinavia, possibly, you know, in Dakar, you know, just to show our disgust.
Do you know when these protests would take place?
Yeah, we're in the making. So we wanted to coordinate it, you know, to really, you know, like attract international attention, particularly, you know, African parties, ECOWAS, AU, you know, other international organizations, the UN, to really know what is really happening. And that tentatively, you know, we are saying the 26th, but, you know, it's not, you know, confirmed yet.
When you mentioned ECOWAS, I saw another prominent member of the Gambian diaspora. He was in the press saying he hoped Senegal would intervene in some way. And you mentioned ECOWAS. What is the responsibility of regional powers such as Senegal and the other ECOWAS leaders to oversee these investigations or make sure that that Jammeh's investigations into the attempted coup are legal and adhere to human rights?
Yes, you know, that is our concern because the vast majority of Gambians, or we call ourselves Senegambians, they are very concerned about what happens, you know, in the region. These bodies can play a very significant role, you know, in preempting any of these, you know, barbaric behavior that he's been known for. This is not the first time, you know, like there have been attempts, you know, to really uproot his regime. You know, the terror, you know, that he unleashed was just abominable, you know.
That was Usenu Mbenga, a member of the Gambian diaspora with the Democratic Union of Gambian Activists. He was speaking with Ricky Stryak from Alabama, USA. A suicide car bomber in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, has killed at least 4 people and wounded 5 others. Security Ministry spokesman Mohammed Yusuf Osman told VOA that security forces has surrounded the car in Waberi district near Mogadishu's international airport when an Al-Shabaab militant detonated explosives in the vehicle.
Today we have received a suicide bomb car, one of the Shabaab targets. The security forces like NISA or the Somali police force, they are aware of that Shabaab are going to make a suicide inside the city today. Of course, when we get that info, we restricted everywhere and we put everywhere our security forces. Then when we get the target, the security forces have surrounded the vehicle. One of the vehicles of Shabaab, those wanted to make today a suicide. After that, when he really sighted his target, he tried to make a suicide inside the civilian. And unfortunately, today we lost 4 of our civilians who was moving around the city or who was moving around on the street or driving their vehicles. We really condemn that news from Shabaab. And the only thing they want to send is a message, to the world that Shabaab is still alive. And what we can say is, Shabaab, they are not alive, they're dead, and this will not be the message they want to send to the world.
That was Somali government security ministry spokesman Mohammed Yusuf Osman. He was speaking with Abdulaziz Osman of VOA Somali Service. Today is Monday, the 5th day of January, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's military is accusing rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar of launching new attacks in the year-long conflict. But the rebels have also accused government forces and pro-government militias of carrying out a series of attacks in Unity and Upper Nile states since Saturday. The rebels say at least 6 civilians have been killed. South Sudan military spokesman Colonel Philip Agua says it is the rebels who have been attacking the town of Nasser near the border with Ethiopia since December 31st in violation of the cessation of hostilities agreement.
The rebels are misleading the international media by accusing the SPLA. This is a false propaganda. It is the rebels that have rejected the ceasefire, and we have invited the IGAD to send monitors to the location where the rebels are claiming. We are ready for monitoring system, and the rebels have rejected the idea of monitoring on the ground.
But, Colonel, the rebels have accused your government forces of launching attacks in the past 2 days, particularly in Unity and Upper Nile states, against their positions. You're denying that.
Yes, it is the opposite. It is the rebels attacking, and we have invited IGAD monitors to go to the ground to verify. The rebels have rejected the monitoring mechanism that has been established by IGAD. SPLA is ready to go to the ground. We have our monitors with the IGAD. Rebels are rejecting the idea of monitoring.
What can you tell us, Colonel, in terms of casualties?
It was a shelling. The rebels were shelling the town, and we have wounded. More than 10 soldiers have been wounded in that shelling. The rebels have received weapons and ammunition from Khartoum in a place called Boz. They are preparing to attack SPLA position in Rang and oil areas in Adar and Faloj. They are also now advancing toward Bentiu, coming from Pantau Hijlij in the Republic of Sudan. They are preparing a place called Karasana, and they are moving toward Bentiu. This location, Bentiu and Nasser, there are United Nations mission bases, and the United Nations mission knows who is in control of those towns and who is attacking. You can just verify from the United Nations and from the IGAD.
Colonel, I know you are a military person, but it's like the people of South Sudan are dancing this dance all over again instead of peace. Prior to the holidays, the Christmas and the New Year, there were appeals to the both sides to make sure that peace comes to the country this New Year. What can you tell the people of South Sudan now?
The SPLA, as a national army of South Sudan, is committed. We are committed to the peace. We are committed to the regional and international effort to bring peace to South Sudan. We don't want our people to continue suffering. And this is why we are calling for international monitoring mechanism to be stationed in all the towns in South Sudan to verify who is violating the ceasefire. I repeat again, SPLA is committed to peace, and it is the rebel attacking the SPLA position in Nasser and all these towns that they are claiming.
Colonel Philip Agua, South Sudan's military spokesman, he was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Birth control is a divisive issue across much of Africa. It challenges culture, religion, and patriarchy. As Christine Roby reports from Dakar, bringing religious leaders into the discussion in Senegal has been an important step to overcoming resistance. Here is her story as part of VOA's Africa Baby Boom series.
Senegal's population of more than 14 million people is 94% Muslim. So when the time came to tackle the issue of birth control as a matter of public policy, health professionals were not the only ones brought into the discussion. The Ministry of Health teamed with local health clinics and religious leaders to forge a new outreach on birth control. Guy Kumbase, manager for social and maternity services at the Senegalese Association for Family Welfare, says the first step was to create a common understanding of the benefits of family planning. She says religious leaders thought the message being sent was to not have children. So when we explain that we are not saying no longer have children, but instead space out births for health of the mother and for the health of the child, things started to change. Guy says there is a pool of imams who agree with family planning, and these are the same leaders who are doing outreach to inform women, telling them to come adopt a method of contraception. Since the campaign was launched in 2011 on the health imperatives of spacing births, infant mortality in Senegal has dropped to about 2%. Guy credits such gains to imam support. But one of the most essential components in the family planning equation is the husband. Especially in more traditional societies where women have less autonomy, getting the men on board can prove more challenging. Guy says bringing the MOS into the effort to disseminate information about the accessibility of affordable contraception and the need for marital support made a difference. She says some husbands are even coming along for the consultation.
Ce qu'on ne pouvait pas avoir avant. Par contre, celles qui ne viennent pas avec leur époux, ils ont l'aval du mari.
We didn't see this before, she says. For those that do not come with their husband, they have the approval of their husband. It is rare that women come without prior consent from their husband, she says. Ida Noem, a midwife at the Association for Family Welfare, says families are now seeing some other benefits of spacing their children.
La femme aura le temps de s'occuper de son mari et elle prendra soin de son mari et de ses enfants.
She says spacing the birth of children gives parents the time to raise the child well and spend time with their husband and child. She says women can also avoid abortion. The use of contraception among married women in Senegal increased to 16% in 2013. Up 4% in the 2 years since the campaign began. A World Health Organization report also calculates a 6% decrease in the maternal mortality rate over the same time. With the collaborative efforts of faith leaders and increased conversations about health and safety, Noem says Senegal is trying to build stronger families. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Dakar.
The International Crisis Group said last month that a hidden conflict is underway in rural parts of the Central African Republic. The conflict is between cattle herders, who are mostly Muslims from the Pew ethnic group, and farmers, who are mostly Christians or animists. Livestock experts are looking for ways to restore friendly relations between the communities and to prevent more of the violence that has torn the country apart for the past 2 years. Nick Long reports from Bambari, a town on the cattle trail.
A mission of livestock experts from a National Cattle Herders Federation, international aid groups and UN and government agencies recently visited rural areas of the Central African Republic. The group found that nomadic and semi-nomadic cattle herders are generally not welcome in agricultural areas. Clashes develop when the herders come under attack and then retaliate. Almost inevitably, the fighting takes on religious or ethnic overtones. Displaced people living at a camp in Bambari told VOA they had fled from the Pearl. This man, Yakbanga Vianney, says, "We, the Christians, the Central African people, are in difficulty because the Pearl are making war on the Christians. That's why we have taken refuge at this site." Most CAR residents are Christians, while the Pearl, a small minority in the nation of 5 million people, are usually Muslims. Recently, aid workers say about 1,000 Christians have been relocating to Bambari every week to escape dangerous conditions in their home villages. The attacks on villages often seem to be reprisals for attacks on the Pearl, usually carried out by anti-Balaka militia groups.
Enfin, ils ont entendu que les Balaka sont...
This man, Ngeri Bisikoa, tells VOA his village was attacked and many houses burned by the Pearl, who thought the area was occupied by anti-Balaka members. The violence around Bambari has mainly been happening along two roads leading south. They seem to be front lines between anti-Balaka coming from the west and the Pearl, who have been driven out of many of their grazing grounds. A health worker at Bambari Hospital, who gave his name as Alex, explained.
Okay, this area is occupied by Bororo's people, who are cattlemen, the Pearl. But there is invasion of Balaka people there. That's why all the time there are movement, there is fighting on this way.
Much of Bambari is controlled by a Pearl warlord, Ali Darassa, who has set up his own movement called the Union for Peace in the CAR, or UPC, its acronym in French. The UPC spokesman, Captain Ahmad Nejad, blamed the anti-Balaka for most of the burned villages, but he acknowledged that Muslims have committed reprisals.
La quasi-totalité de ces villages qui sont incendiés, c'est incendié par des anti-Balaka.
Even if Muslims do sometimes burn a village, Captain Nejad said, there will have been a reason, and so long as the anti-Balaka don't touch anyone, there won't be any reprisals. A seasonal migration of cattle from north to south is now underway, and the joint mission of livestock experts warned this could lead to further violence. The experts recommend placing peacekeepers near the Chadian border to help minimize violent incidents. Nick Long for VOA News, Bambari.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. A goal scored by winger Thuso Pala in the 81st minute lifted hosts South Africa to a 1-0 victory over Zambia in an Orange Africa Cup of Nations build-up match at the Orlando Stadium in Soweto, South Africa on Sunday. Despite the narrow loss, Zambia's coach Ona Janza is optimistic about his team's prospect at the Nations Cup, which starts on the 17th of January.
Going by our last three games, I think we were so aggressive going towards the opponent's goal mouth. But in today's game, of course, maybe we didn't attempt so much going forward. We tried to make amends on the second striker. We wanted to see what Chisamba can do, the second striker from the deep midfield. Today's game was a good eye-opener for us to know where we stand. As a team, we didn't do a lot of striking. And the unfortunate situation is that even obvious chances that came our way, we did not utilize. I think we had we were the first to have a clear-cut chance. I think Jackson Wanza was in front of the goal, which was almost yawning.
Zambia won the cup in 2012 in Gabon and Equatorial Guinea, a very sentimental victory given the history of tragedy that took place there. Have you set any target for the competition?
I, for one, as a coach, there's nothing that I would love in my career than paying my country the best reward, like giving them the cup. Of course, I have to, again, focus on the players themselves. With the branding of new players and old players, the mileage of expectation, of course, may be too high for them to think about winning the cup. But to them, the target will be to come out of the group stage as the best two. Maybe go to the quarterfinals, struggle, go to the semifinals. But that will be for the players. But for me as a coach, to be in the finals, and for the fans is to give them the cup. So I think if the cup will go to Zambia, it shouldn't be a surprise because we are ready for.
That was Ona Janza, coach of Zambia's Chipolopolo, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Monday morning comes from Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria. He says, "Dear VOA, I think the assurance given by the Vice President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, Namadi Sambo, that the 2015 election will be free and fair is a welcome New Year's message. I think it is meant to allay fears from the minds of not only Nigerians, but also the global community." We thank you, Ambrose Agio of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Suspected Boko Haram militants have seized a military base in the northeast Nigerian town of Baga. Local residents said the armed Islamist group overwhelmed troops after an hour-long battle at a facility near Lake Chad. Soldiers and civilians reportedly fled the area following multiple attacks on Saturday. And a suicide car bomber in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, has killed at least 4 people. Security Ministry spokesman Mohammed Yusuf Osman told VOA security forces have surrounded the car in Wambari district near Mogadishu's International Airport. And that is it for this Monday, January 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark O'Woman, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.